Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Thank you for listening to AFR. Ed Vitagliano is co-hosting with me today, and Steve Jordahl is in Studio Venus. Ed and I are together here on Earth, and Steve is on Venus because we want to practice social distancing. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, everybody, and happy Star Wars Day.
That's right, May 4th.
Yes.
May the 4th be with you.
Yes.
Is today really Star Wars Day?
It is. May 4th. For that very reason, may the force be with you.
I remember
that.
Which
I don't want any part of the force, but that May the 4th.
Is that when the original movie came out or something?
It's just a play on the phrase.
I think it's just but it's been around for a while, this Star Wars Day.
I think we're going nowhere with this.
Let me just say, I was always a Star Trek instead of Star Wars.
Yeah, I kind of am there too.
Yeah. You can like both.
Are y'all through?
You want to be that way? Yeah, I'm through. I'm finished.
I'm more of the Martian guy.
You what?
The Martian.
The Martian.
Yeah.
From Bugs Bunny? Remember the...
There was a TV show by the Martian too, but... back in the day.
My favorite Martian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wasn't the movie with, what's his name called, The Martian?
Again, to repeat, going nowhere.
Yeah, we better get to some news stories before we start. I'm hearing radios turn off all across the country.
All right. Hey, the city of New York is expressing its deep and heartfelt gratitude to Samaritan's Purse. This statement from New York City Council Speaker Corey Johnson: "My statement on Samaritan's Purse. It's time for Samaritan's Purse to leave New York City. This group, led by the notoriously bigoted, hate-spewing Franklin Graham, came at a time when our city couldn't, in good conscience, turn away any offer of help. That time has passed. Their continued presence here is an affront to our values. The New York City Council is committed to supporting those workers and protecting our city's public health. But as a city that values diversity and compassion for all, we cannot continue to allow a group with their track record to remain here when we're past the point where they're needed."
Hey, that's...
You're talking about speaking out of both sides of your mouth. Huh? We're glad they were here to help save lives. Now get on out of here.
Right, exactly. Because we disagree with your values. That is as close as I've heard in a long time to a government official saying Christians need not apply. We don't want Christians here. I mean, is that not what he's saying? The values he's talking about, when he throws in the what they call the dog whistle, word diversity, is the stance of Samaritan's Purse and the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, the biblical stance on sex and marriage.
It should be noted, I'm not sure what he's saying when he talks about the track record of Samaritan's Purse. As far as I know, its track record is showing up at disasters and helping and handing out Christmas gifts to kids who are in impoverished countries. That's their track record.
Right.
Yeah, but a lot of these lefties, if you, as Ed cited, if you believe the biblical teaching that homosexuality is sin, then you don't deserve to be heard. Or you don't really deserve to participate in society.
Yeah.
Because you are, by definition, that is the definition of the, quote, progressives, is that a belief that homosexuality is sin, which it is according to the Bible, but you don't have to believe in the Bible, that's fine.
Right.
If you want to say, I don't believe in the Bible. But you can't say, I believe in the Bible, and not acknowledge that it teaches that homosexuality is sinful behavior.
Unless you're twisting the Bible.
Yeah. So the, quote, progressives say, okay, if you believe that homosexuality is sinful, you are a hater. You are a bigot. And therefore, you need to be disqualified or canceled from society.
And get out.
Huh?
And get out of New York City.
Yeah, get out of New York City. Yeah.
De Blasio said something similar, I think.
The mayor, you're talking
the
about?
Mayor. When, back in the day, it wasn't regarding this virus, but I remember him saying that pro-lifers are not welcome in New York City.
That was Cuomo.
Was that Cuomo, too? It was that Cuomo?
Cuomo.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past Bill de Blasio.
Right. Oh, Cuomo said, the governor said, pro-lifers weren't welcome.
Right.
Or if you didn't believe in same-sex marriage, you were not welcome in New York State. Of course, he's a big diversity guy. Diversity as long as you believe like I believe.
Yes. This is getting tiresome. The internal contradiction you just cited.
Yeah.
They're all about diversity, but only if you agree with us. It's just getting tiresome.
And they particularly can't stand Christians.
Right.
If this were a Muslim, Muslims don't do charity work.
There is the Red Crescent.
Yeah, well, they got five people.
Right.
But I'm just saying Muslims, charity work to help the down and out and the unfortunate and the misfortunate and the people who suffer from natural disasters, that does not exist in Islamic teaching. All right? If it does, I'm unaware of it, and it's certainly not nearly on the scale of Christianity. But Christian teaching is that you do help people, because you do help people who are down and out or who are... Even your enemies, because to do so is to honor God, and God is pleased by that.
Right.
There's no teaching in Islam that Allah is pleased when you help your fellow man.
There's something...
That doesn't even maybe even agree with you.
There's something in Islam about what you're supposed to do with... your enemies, people. What was that? What do you do with the infidel again?
I'm just saying.
I'm sorry.
I'm just saying that if this were at the Red Crescent setting up in Central Park, the mayor of New York City Council, the governor, they would not have anything to say about the same belief in Islam.
No, even worse. They'll throw them off buildings.
Really noted.
Yeah, they'd probably be getting the key to the city right now.
Right, that's what I'm saying. The secular progressives have a particular hatred, if that's what you want to call it, for biblical Christians, biblical Christianity.
Right.
Evangelicals, they would put us on an island,
right,
by ourselves if they could, or worse, they just cannot stand us.
Right.
And so. That's why they hate Vice President Pence as much as they hate Donald Trump, even though Donald Trump is not a, quote, evangelical. You know what I'm saying? Like Vice President Pence is.
Right. As far as we know.
As far as we know. I mean, I'm just saying that isn't President Trump's history.
Right.
All right, okay? I'm not saying President Trump is not a Christian or anything like that. I'm saying that he's not been identified as an evangelical like Vice President Pence. So they hate Pence, too.
Yes.
But they hate him for different reasons. They hate him because he's an evangelical Christian who doesn't believe in science. Huh? Watch them. They'll say that all the time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they don't believe in Trump. In fact, remember, was it the New York Times that came out with an editorial a few weeks back? I think it was the New York Times that said that evangelicals were to blame for the pandemic.
It was an op-ed. It wasn't the New York Times editorial board, but it was in the New York Times.
What did it say?
It said that evangelical Christians are responsible for the coronavirus and the deaths because they're anti-science, and that led them to vote for Donald Trump.
No, they influenced Trump.
Yes, and then they influenced Trump, who's also anti-science, and that's why people are dying.
Yeah.
Because
imagine saying that about any other group.
Right.
And get away with it. You'd be run out of office.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Or your newspaper would be hounded. But if you secular progressives, if you can go after those crazy Christians.
Right.
And do whatever you have to do to them to shut them down, to stop them, that's what you need to do.
It's worth it because they're evil.
Right. This from an organization, from a group of, from a philosophy that doesn't really believe in evil.
Right. That's right.
Huh?
Evil as we define it, say the progressives.
Evil as we define it, yeah. All right, Steve.
I got a question for you guys. If we were living in a state that still said that you can't gather in groups of more than 10, and I think actually at this point we are, if your neighbors were having a party that had more than 10 people there, would you be willing to call the police on them?
No.
No.
I would not. You're saying if my neighbor had a party with more than 10 people?
I would. If it was my college football rival fans.
Yeah, that's right.
And they were having a party, game watch party, I'd call.
So if let me ask you this, Steve. Did they invite me to the party?
No.
It's another thing.
So if they did not invite me, would I take revenge? No, I still wouldn't.
Well, by a 60% to, I'm sorry, a 44% to 25%, it's interesting. Democrats, 44% of them said that they would narc on their neighbor. 25% of Republicans said that they would. There's a vast difference between the way Republicans and Democrats treat this virus. We're seeing that. I think you guys talked about it a little bit at the top of the last hour, that red states and blue states are treating this differently. I'd like you to hear, if I could, cut six from Matt Staver. He's talking a little bit about this.
There is no question that there is a big difference between the burdensome restrictions imposed by Democratic leadership, either at the governor's level or at the local government level, versus Republican. That particular jurisdiction wanted to say that communion was not essential to worship. Unbelievable that the government would have that kind of audacity to say so. What you're seeing right now is the states that are opening up their restrictions. They're going to be red states, and the blue states are going to lag behind. Going to be the blue states that are going to continue to impose these restrictions for some time.
I have noticed that there, and I'm guessing it's along these same lines, conservative versus progressive, Republican versus Democrat, red versus blue, that when I read comments underneath stories dealing with the coronavirus versus opening up society, that there's just two ways of looking at this. We've done as much as we can. It's time to open things up, get the economy going. And the other side, hey, the governor's just trying to keep us safe. What's the matter? You don't care about people dying. And I'm guessing that that's what you're talking about, Steve. That is the dichotomy between these two groups and the country. And we shouldn't be surprised because this country is split right down the middle.
But so, you know what? That's the way it should be.
What's that?
Not split right down the middle. Let states decide whether they want to reopen or not. That's the way it should be. If Oregon wants to stay closed to 2025, to make sure the virus is eradicated from the earth, to protect the most vulnerable, then go for it. You live there. If you're in Texas or Mississippi or another state that's even Colorado, which is as I said is a purple state, they're opening back up.
Right.
So, but, I'm saying those governors that are imposing these most strict prohibitions against opening up, they have to answer to their own people.
Yes.
And as I say, if people have the right to be wrong. She would tell me I'm not wrong. I'm right by closing down the state. I'm
talking about like Michigan Governor Whitmer.
Governor Brown in Oregon until, July the 6th?
Yeah.
So, I do think this is best left in the hands of the states and the governors because they're going to be more responsive to their citizens. And that's the way it is constitutionally. The president is correct. He can't dictate everything from Washington, D.C.
Right.
Go ahead, Steve.
Well, you might not have heard about this because it was buried in paragraphs 20 and 21 of the AP Puff piece that was talking about this, but there were two new allegations against Joe Biden. There are two new corroborations of the Tara Reid allegation of rape against Joe Biden. It came out this weekend, new, in addition to the others that we've been hearing. One friend said she knew Reid in 1993, said Reid told them about the alleged assault when it happened. The second friend met Reid more than a decade after the alleged incident and confirmed that Reid had conversations with a friend in 2007 or 2008 about sexual harassment from Biden while working in his Senate office.
Most Democrats don't give a rip.
No, well, it's true. The editorial board of the New York Times, you were giving them a little bit of a pass there, Ed, on the fact that they didn't say that whatever it was that we were talking about with the New York Times a second ago.
I don't think I gave them a pass.
Well, you shouldn't, because this time, this is what they're saying about the allegations against Joe Biden. Any inventory, this is of his records and of the allegations, should be strictly limited to information about Ms. Reed and the conducted by an unbiased, apolitical panel put together by the DNC.
The Democrat National Committee.
Yes.
Come on. You know what? We need to, let's back off here for just a minute from the particular corroborations, as you say, or this that new evidence has come out and that new evidence has come out or whatever the case may be. If I can back us up for just a minute, what we should be focusing on, in my opinion, is not whether or not Vice President Biden, then Senator Biden, sexually violated this woman, Tara Reid, back in the 80s?
1993.
93, okay. People can make up their own mind based on, and people do, based on what they hear and see about this. And I think you can do it, you could do it objectively without letting politics enter into it if you want. And that's the way I think people should value this. You're not going to be able to prove or disprove this. You're just not.
Right.
But the bigger picture I'm talking about here is this. The Democrats and the liberal media and the Me Too movement set the standard for us. They set the rules that we're all supposed to play by, including Joe Biden, who said all women need to be believed. When Brett Kavanaugh was nominated for the Supreme Court, they said, and then this woman from California comes out of nowhere to say that he groped me and was groped me and what is did
she pinned him down on a bed, she
yeah,
said.
She said when he was a teenager and we were at a party, he pinned me down on the bed, Brett Kavanaugh. And then, you know, where did it happen? I don't know. When did it happen? I don't know. Got anybody that you told that can come forth to say that you know? Okay. The standard then by Nancy Pelosi and the others in the Democrat Party and the was that all that Judge Kavanaugh's case needed to be was so serious that we need to bring this woman to Washington, D.C. and make a spectacle of it. And we all saw what happened there. So I'm just saying they set the standard. They made the rules. So whether or not Biden is guilty of this or not, we'll never know, I don't think. But the rules have the Democrats have now gone completely and totally and shamelessly against their own standard that right. they set. It came back to bite them in the rear end within a matter of 2 years. Is that right?
2018.
It came back. Yeah. But see, they're without embarrassment.
Right.
Okay. Nancy Pelosi said the other day when asked about this double standard with Brett Kavanaugh and Joe Biden and the accusations. And by the way, keep in mind, one is accusing somebody as a teenager of forcing himself on her without rape or anything like that at a party that she doesn't remember where or when. The other is a specific allegation against a powerful United States senator when she was an intern.
Right.
Okay, and she has a date, or she has a, and she has some corroboration that you can consider whether she's telling the truth or not. So it's not even comparable to me in terms of the power there that a senator has over an intern.
Right.
So I'm just saying that Nancy Pelosi the other day says, "Well, do you not understand this double standard? Do you not see it?" And she goes, "I don't need to be lectured."
Yeah,
and she said, "Here's her answer to this. Joe Biden is Joe Biden." What the world does that mean?
Right.
Huh? What Brett Kavanaugh is Brett Kavanaugh. What kind right. of answer is that? What if, if Mitch McConnell said, I don't need to be lectured to about, see, it's a complete, utter, total, they've destroyed any credibility they had on this issue, but they sold their soul for short-term political gain, trying to knock out, two or three votes against Brett Kavanaugh at the time to keep him off the Supreme Court. So,
well, once again, I think the reason they're able to be so brazen and have no shame is because they know the vast majority of media outlets in this country are going to protect them. They're not going to call them into question.
No, the vast majority of media outlets in this country are armed as they're the PR firm,
right?
They're the PR company of the Democrat National Committee,
right?
And the Democratic Party. So, the New York Times, when asked about this, they got like 700 stories against Brett Kavanaugh. They got two about Joe Biden,
yeah.
And they said, "Well, this was a hot story at the time." Talking about Brett Kavanaugh, remember that?
It's important. He's going to be a lifetime tenure on the Supreme Court.
Right. So you got a guy running for president of the United States
who can appoint members to the Supreme Court.
And that's not a big story,
right,
according to the New York Times. As I say, it's just comical. It's just shameless. Shameless is the right word here. They have no embarrassment on this. They've chosen to go with Joe Biden. It doesn't matter if he did this to this woman or not. They don't care about that.
Right.
So they really don't care about the Me Too movement or sexual harassment against women. It's we need to, which is fine, but just say that.
Yeah.
Just say that.
We only care if the perpetrator is a Republican.
Right.
That's we only care under those circumstances.
I think this, in the end, all comes down to abortion. If you could boil all this down, the Democrats want to protect abortion on demand for the full 9 months. And it doesn't matter what they have to do it. That's what Brett Kavanaugh was about. They should have just said, all they had to do with Brett Kavanaugh is say, listen, I told you this the other day, Ed, the Democrats could have done this. Listen, we don't like Brett Kavanaugh, and we don't care how are we ever supposed to know whether he groped a woman 40 years ago. All we're saying is we're against him anyway. And so he might overturn Roe versus Wade. So that's the reason we're opposing him.
Right.
And then it would have spared the whole country this slander against this poor man and the humiliation and embarrassment that brought to him and his family. Not that they were humiliated because it was true. I'm just saying, you know what they had to go through.
Right.
And it saved the whole country, this whole thing. Just say I'm voting. The Democrats were never going to vote for Brett Kavanaugh. There wasn't a single Democrat who was going to go, you know what? If he's not guilty of this, I'm going to vote for him.
Right.
I think I'm going to vote for him.
Because he's qualified otherwise.
Because he's qualified. Yeah, so anyway, go ahead, Steve.
To kind of wrap that up, just for accuracy's sake, Tara Reid was a staffer, not an intern, but everything you're saying is correct. This is the headline at the Babylon Bee, our favorite satirical newspaper. It says, "I have never treated a woman inappropriately," Joe Biden whispers into a journalist's ear while giving her a shoulder rub.
Oh, the Babylon Bee is, they are on fire, man.
Yeah.
I've seen more and more pictures and videos of Biden, I guess because of these accusations, it's all brought all that back up again. And he really is creepy. This is not, I know the explanation has always been, well, he's just a touchy-feely kind of person, you know, and he likes to hug. And you kind of think of people you know that are kind of that way. Hey, give me a hug. No, the videos of him are just downright creepy.
You see the look on the face of that girl that was like a 16 or 17 year old girl he was getting too close to at one of those White House things when he was vice president?
Yes.
She looks so uncomfortable. I can barely look at the picture.
I've seen pictures of husbands giving the dirty eye to the vice president, you know, former vice president. Nobody likes it. Anyway.
All right, Steve. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Ed, thank you for your contribution.
Absolutely.
Our thanks to Fred Jackson and Brent Creeley. Brent produces the show for us. And we hope you have a great day, folks, and we will inform you tomorrow what day it is. Then. Have a good one.